welcome everyone to the Screamcast, the podcast covering pretty much all things Scream Factory. With me,
Brad Henderson, and our special guest.
Yes. Hi. Brian Sauer, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm honored.
Awesome.
We're honored, too. For the people that don't know the name Brian Sauer, you'll probably know his alias, Bob Freelander, or Rupert Pumpkin from Rupert Pumpkin Speaks, .blogspot.com.
Thank you for the plug, yes. Those are my aliases.
We should forewarn everybody that we've had some technical difficulties, so we're all kind of flustered, and this show might be pretty fun, or it might be really bad. So just prepare yourself.
I'm ready for either.
You're ready.
All right.
Well, first, I think we should get in for Brian Sauer. Your blog is kind of notorious, I would say, from all the little posts that you do between discoveries and favorite film discoveries and bad movies we love. You have filmmakers that come on to actually post on there, as long as other bloggers and friends of yours. How did all that originate and start up? Just wanted to create a blog, kind of, and it just went from there? Or was
yeah.
that your original intentions?
I mean, yeah, it's sort of it's expanded, gotten much more work intensive, but that's totally fine. I just started, I think about 2010, early 2010, I was, I just love movies, and I was trying to, I'd heard about blogging, and obviously I was, you know, late to the game, but I was like, oh, maybe I had some bloggers that I really liked, like, I love the blog, Sergio Leone and the Infield Fly Rule, and Dennis over there had a great list of his favorite 100 movies. And I think that was one of the impetuses for me was, I want to do a list of my favorite 100 movies. Because he had it broken down by decade, and he had a specific way that he labeled each movie, which has become the way I do, which is like name of the movie, year, and the director in parentheses. And so that's like my standard language now. But anyway, so Dennis was a big influence, and I just started posting. I did that list, the 100 films, which is a lot of work, but a lot of fun to put together. And then I just started doing other lists, and then I started Twitter eventually, and was putting lists out there, and started to come across cool people like yourselves, and I started asking people to contribute lists, and it's become kind of a regular thing. I do underrated. I've done horror. Let's see here, bad movies you love. I'm trying to think. Comedies, underrated comedies. This year I'm going to do underrated westerns. That's an underrated detective / mysteries. But anyway, it's just fun to reach out to a lot of talented and interesting movie fans out there that I've come across. I've made some really great friends via the blog and Twitter that a lot of people like yourselves also that I've never met in person. And it's a very cool thing.
I mean, that's how I've met. I mean, met a whole lot of people that I talk. I mean, the only people I really talk film with anymore are, you know, people on Twitter and everything, because it seems like everywhere where I live, there's like this, it's like, you know, this desert where there's no film fans, you know?
So, oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. So on Twitter, I'm like, I'm not alone. Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's Twitter has been to maybe my wife's chagrin. Twitter has been a very engaging thing for me. And if I ever travel to certain places like Austin, Texas, it's going to be like some kind of weird reunion with all these people that I've never met. Because I've gotten to know so many of them over the last 3 years. Which is pretty great.
Well, you should come to Fantastic Fest with me when the baby is grown up a little bit more.
Absolutely, man. That's one of my big, like, not bucket list, because that implies much later in life, like sooner than that. I really want to do that.
And one thing I want to address is one thing that always stuck out with me, because when I very first noticed what you were doing, I always say that you're the different type of blogger than what most people do, because, I mean, people specialize in, you know, westerns, or they specialize like in cheesy horror films, but you're all across the board. I don't think I've ever seen anybody that, you know, loves Groucho Marx as much as you do, but also loves like the really B-rated films to the westerns to, you know, just going ape shit when new releases come out from the Warner Archive, which is kind of crazy to me, because I mean, we all have, like, I consider myself pretty knowledgeable, but nowhere near the type of stuff that, you know, like Warner Archive puts out and watch those movies. Like, I enjoy those movies, but just to see somebody as, you know, as, I don't know, as knowledgeable as certain people are, other than, you know, the big film critics that have went down in history. But yeah, something I've always noticed that's always kind of stuck with me with you. So that is actually going nowhere. I just
no.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, I really appreciate it, man. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing. I think Twitter has helped grow my love of all different kinds of movies. I've always kind of been like that. I've certainly gone in phases, and I still go in phases where, like, horror movies or classic movies, those two stick around a lot. But there's so many pockets of people on Twitter that when I want to talk about Warner Archive, those people I can light up and talk to. When I want to talk about horror, those people are there. So it's just motivated me even more to be more searching out all kinds of different stuff, and hopefully motivating other people, which is what I look for on Twitter, is people that are looking for all kinds of different stuff, and the blogs and stuff. Like, there's so many cool inspirational people out there. It's kind of crazy. It's weird to think of a time when none of this existed, and we couldn't connect and get ideas from each other in the same way, and it's a pretty fantastic thing.
Yeah.
Agree. And also, I'd like to thank you for saving me a shit ton of money, Brian, because you always have the latest sales and deals on Amazon.
Yeah,
so if you want to save money, follow Bob Freelander. Trust me.
Yeah, well, I mean, some people get pissed because I make them spend money when they don't necessarily want to. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, it's one of the regular things I can post. And I just keep an eye on Blu-ray.com, which, if anybody wants to do that, you can just go to their, you know, deals of the day and their lowest,
right.
Click on the lowest prices tab, and that's all I do every other day.
I check it every day, yep, because of you.
Yeah, I've definitely spent a lot more money. I've saved money, but I've spent a lot of money I wouldn't spend because of that stuff.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, no, that every time around, like, the holidays and everything, when I'm trying not to spend money, there's always crazy deals, and that's whenever I see you post something, you know.
Oh yeah,
I end up spending way more than I should.
Yeah.
Oh no, God.
It's the holidays are terrible for that.
Yeah, December, you know? I spent so much damn money, it was bad, so bad. And it was all because of Brian Sauer.
Well, I'm really trying not to spend a lot of money during the year because I know I'm going to get all that crap, you know, December-ish. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, so, let's
go ahead, Sean.
We'll probably jump into talking about the two movies.
Let's do it.
That we are going to be discussing today's Scream Factory release that we are putting under the microscope is their double feature of Bad Dreams and Visiting Hours.
Yeah!
is that a, like, in order response kind of thing, I'm guessing?
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Visiting Hours, so let's get into it.
Well, we'll talk about Visiting Hours in a second, because I think I have a different opinion than Brad about the movie.
But, just Sean, there is no such thing as opinions.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, that's right. We're on the internet. There's no room for opinions at all.
Nobody does that online.
Well, let's just jump right into what we'll do here. We'll talk about Bad Dreams. I got a band I want to feature today. Then we'll jump into Visiting Hours as kind of the order of events, which probably, you know, they can either stay or go out the window as we move forward. But, so, 1988's Bad Dreams was directed by Andrew Fleming, and it was produced by Gail Ann Hurd, who you may know as being, she's produced Terminator, she's produced Aliens, she was married to James Cameron.
Yep.
And, you know, some people say, you know, once that marriage ended, maybe Jim Cameron's movies went down. I don't know.
But,
is that debatable?
Unless Avatar is the only one. Everything I wouldn't go there.
Well,
delete that last comment.
Damn it! I'm always getting myself in trouble. But so anyway, with this movie, I'm super impressed on how good it was, because it was Andrew Fleming's first ever movie. He had never shot on 35 millimeter before. He was asking, like, the crew how to do certain things, you know.
I love that in the commentary, there's that bit. It's a great commentary. I just re-listened to it again.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, like, there was one day on set when somebody, his script supervisor or somebody, was saying something about eye lines. And he's like, what's an eye line? And he said there was like this audible or this shudder that he felt from like the whole cat crew.
So like, despite all that, I'm surprised how solid this flick is. And I know in the commentary too, he did mention that, that James Cameron did kind of help him, help guide him a little bit with the script and certain things. So, you know, I guess if you're going to do your first movie, you might as well get some help from James Cameron.
Yeah. Well, I think with his first movie, he kind of knocked it out of the park, because with how 80s horror films were, and this one kind of stands out a little bit as being one of the better ones, and it kind of comes out of nowhere too. That's what I kind of liked about it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No, I totally agree. I'm an okay fan of the Nightmare series. Like, I like obviously the first one, and three's all right. But I prefer this movie to almost all of them personally.
But yeah,
I know they're different and similar in a lot of ways, but
well, it came out was it a year after Nightmare on Elm Street 3, which that one also takes place in like an insane asylum, doesn't it?
Yeah, and Jennifer Rubin is in it as well.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Yeah,
but yeah, you just I don't know. I mean, Robert Englund is great. Obviously, I hated that the series became so jokey and he became that character. I know a lot of people dig that, but I don't. And Richard Lynch
is
just
the same way.
Richard Lynch is so menacing and creepy that he just, to have a great movie, you need a great villain, and Richard Lynch is absolutely that, and he's fucking great.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Richard Lynch in this, and, you know, I seem to always be drawn to kind of these movies about, like, 70s cults and stuff like that. I mean, I have a religious background, so I'm really fond of kind of, you know, religion gone wrong type stories.
Oh, yeah, I'm the same way, so, yeah, totally.
So his cult leader, and you only get snippets of him, of the actual cult, but those snippets are strong enough to kind of, you know, you get who this guy is, and you get kind of why he would, his presence would be still haunting this, you know, this woman after being, you know, in a coma for, I think they said 13 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he's at once, like, creepy and yet totally compelling and charismatic in this weird way that you just something about his eyes and his voice, which is really great, that just are you can see how he would influence people or how he could influence people.
Yeah,
I think that's Richard Lynch on a daily basis. He kind of creeps me out. So
no, I totally agree.
He's a little more overbearing in this one than usual, but yeah, he's always been a pretty strong character.
Yeah.
Piece. I would try to think of what was his last movie that he was in? Shit.
The very last one?
Yeah.
I know I saw it because I think I made note of the fact that he was in it and it was the last movie.
Consulting IMDb.
I have to look at it. I have to do it.
Oh, Lords of Salem. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that was his last one. No, I was thinking of something else.
Yeah,
that's
I just thought
cool.
I thought that was kind of a, you know, even though there's some hate towards Rob Zombie, I personally still love him. But aside from Halloween too. I just thought that was kind of a powerful way to go out, especially with Lords of Salem, even though it wasn't, you know, the biggest role that he had in that film. But I just thought it was a strong way to go out, especially with all those other characters and actors that were in that movie, like, you know, Ben Foster and Bruce Davidson and the three like Dee Wallace and Patricia Quinn. And I can't think of the other girl's name. What was the other?
Meg Foster.
I said
Meg Foster.
Judy Geeson.
Oh, that's right. Judy Geeson.
Yeah. But I mean, there was plenty. I mean, you could go every Rob Zombie film. He kind of does that. But I don't know. I just thought it was a cool way to go out. That's all.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great ensemble to be a part of for sure.
So, do we need to kind of go over the little plot synopsis for this, or it's a pretty straightforward flick?
I say it's pretty. I mean, you go for it, Sean.
Well, you know,
do what you
just in case,
do.
Just in case, you know, you're coming to this and you haven't seen Bad Dreams. This was my first time seeing it, but you almost,
oh, cool.
You know, you don't really need. I'm kind of hit or miss on plot synopsis anyway. But basically, a girl wakes up from a 13-year coma, and she's haunted by the cult leader that was responsible for kind of a mass suicide. Basically, is the synopsis, you know, and she's being haunted basically, or something. He's coming back in this hospital while she's in there. Is all you need to know, basically. I don't want to give any more away than that, because I think
also Dean Cameron is in this movie, which yes. a lot of people don't know, but like he was in like Ski School.
Oh yes,
and
Summer School,
and Summer School too. And he just he's just the most likable person when he smiles, and it was just funny to see him in a horror film like this. But it's just because whenever he just smiles, his like smile brightens up the room. But in this one, it doesn't do it so much because it's, you know, a horror film and not like a sex comedy.
Yeah, but
yeah,
but that character, like, that's what I liked about this movie was, I mean, everyone's a bit crazy, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
I wrote down my notes here. It's basically One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest meets Nightmare on Elm Street 3 was what I would describe it.
Yeah, that's a good pitch to somebody that hasn't seen it. I mean, just to give them an idea.
Yeah, but you know, Dean Cameron's great. I really liked his character. My first notes that I wrote down were eyebrows, because his eyebrows are immaculately, like, you know.
I'm surprised chiseled. It wasn't his teeth.
Come on, man, a
freak.
Go ahead. Sorry, I was gonna say he is great. I mean, he has, and in the commentary too. I know you listened to it too, Sean, but. He said that he let Dean Cameron go and kind of make up some lines, and you can kind of guess where he might have, but they're all great. Everything he does is pretty great in this movie, I think, you know. He's kind of like his character in Summer School a little bit, if he was like a little darker and angrier.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I thought let's go through, like, when did you guys first, cause this was my first time seeing this movie, so. You know, Brian, when did you first, you know?
Actually, this was one I somehow missed, and I saw it maybe 2010 or 2011 for the first time. Okay. Or if I'd seen it, I didn't remember it because it was a complete surprise, especially the ending, which I actually love the ending.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't go for that kind of twisty stuff, but I think it's great, and it really works for me. But yeah, so I don't know what my expectations were or whatever, but it totally caught me off guard and really impressed me when I saw it. And I was like, wow, yeah. I picked up the Anchor Bay disc, which was the only one at the time that it was out. And then I picked up the double disc set that came out from Shout, and now the Blu-ray. So, I mean, it's one I'll always want to own. It's that good.
How about you, Brian? Or sorry, Brian, Brad, when did you first,
God, I'm the fucking co-host and you don't even know my goddamn name. Mine was a while ago because I actually still own the VHS of this and Visiting Hours, which are both on the CBS Fox label that I have. And when I was younger, I would put all my instead of alphabetical order, I would put all my labels together, and those two were always together. So it was kind of funny to see, you know, Shout Factory a few years ago release it as the double feature, and then Scream does it again. They've always kind of been together for me, and they are a good pair, I believe. Besides Visiting Hours, isn't that good? But I can't stress that enough. But Bad Dreams, I don't know, maybe when I was maybe 8 or so, I guess.
Oh, wow.
8 or 9. Because I remember the hand over the mouth was just kind of one of those iconic box art things that I always saw and was always intrigued. And I finally got around to renting it when I was younger. I don't think I appreciated it as much until like I saw it later in life. But I saw mine at a very, very young age.
But yeah, I mean,
honestly,
I
can't remember watching it.
You're totally right about the box art. I mean, that's obviously, it was a great, not to wax whatever about the VHS days, but it was a great cover, and there were so many great covers in any given mom and pop VHS horror section that, you know, again, pre-internet, you didn't know, you couldn't go look it up and get a general sense of, oh, actually, this movie sucks. Metamorphosis. Yeah. I love that cover with the blinking eyes, but that movie's terrible. Or the dead pit, same thing, you know, great blinking eye cover, looks great, movie sucks, you know, but before that, like, you'd see a cover like Bad Dreams or whatever, and there was just so much promise to all those movies because they took the time to really grab your eye with that cover art.
Yeah.
When I was little, I thought it was a black and white movie because the cover was black and white.
Oh yeah.
I think because all kids when they were, well, not all kids, mm-hmm. but there's a good amount of kids when they're younger, they don't like to watch black and white movies. And that was, I was one of those kids, which I'm ashamed to admit that, but I was, and I'm definitely not doing that with my daughter. She's watching all black and white movies, so that way she could appreciate it like I do. But, you that's know, that's great. How kids are. They're like, I don't watch anything. And even adults, I don't watch anything black and white. Fuck you!
I think it's just a matter of where you start with them. So if you start with them and it's not at all strange to look at, then it's not anything. They have no prejudice against it, you know? Yeah. So I think that's great, man. I'm glad you're doing that. I'm doing the same thing with mine.
Yeah, I'm attempting to do the same thing with mine. I think my son's a little more. He started with Godzilla, so he's a little more apt to watch a black and white flick.
But good place to start.
But my daughter, she'll mention that this is black. There's no color. Why, you know? Oh well, you win some, you lose some.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the cover art and everything, I know that the film didn't make a ton of money. They were kind of hoping to make that this would be some sort of, you know, franchise, which I don't understand how that would work with this movie. But do you think the movie, considering that it's not 100% like a shocker horror flick? I mean, there's some gore in it, definitely, but it's not. I don't think it's comparable to anything like Nightmare on Elm Street as far as the horror element, because there's a lot more psychological stuff involved. Do you guys think it was kind of mismarketed, or do you think it needed that kind of just that cover? You know,
I don't have an answer for that. You just like put one over my head, Sean.
Yeah,
I definitely don't see it being a series.
The way that it ends, and not to necessarily give that away, but there's almost no way that you really can continue, because there's something that in the plot that hinges on a certain thing that would have to happen again, I guess, for it to. Movie to happen again, so I don't see how it would work like that.
Yeah,
unless they, you know, they turned Richard Lynch into Jason and somehow resurrected him, or something like that.
That's probably what they would, you know, what they would do.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Anything's possible back then, because we got a bunch of sequels that don't make any sense. But
you're totally right.
It was just, if I'm pretty sure if Bad Dreams made $50 million at the box office, we would be talking about Bad Dreams 5 right now.
Yeah.
But it didn't. It kind of bombed.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Andrew Fleming. Let's not forget, he directed The Craft, which is kind of a big guilty pleasure of mine.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of The Craft.
And Harry and the Hendersons.
Me too. Nice.
What?
My daughter loves Harry and the
Hendersons. Did they direct Harry and the Hendersons, or am I totally off base? I'm full of shit. Sorry.
Yeah, everybody. I don't think that's right. He might have directed a Bigfoot movie, but he
totally
didn't direct.
I'm totally full of crap right now. You know what? I got confused when I was watching the movie. I glanced at my phone. I think there was an announcement about a Harry and the Hendersons Blu-ray.
Oh,
so I'm getting,
dude, that was me.
Was that
you? I'm sorry, man. My apologies.
That's hilarious. You know, I'm getting all my wires crossed.
So basically, Brian Sauer fucked up the podcast.
He did.
It's my fault.
Goddamn Brian Sauer.
Harry and yes, people should buy Harry and the Hendersons on Blu-ray, though.
He did direct 2007's Nancy Drew. And I'm not on IMDb at all at right now.
Oh, God. Don't mention. Let's just talk about. This is like horror movie podcast. I would consider The Craft a horror movie.
The
not
Craft
Nancy
is awesome.
Drew.
No, The Craft is awesome, and The Craft is legitimate. Like, I wish he would do more. Would have stayed in the kind of the horror vein, because he's only done, as far as horror goes, this and The Craft, as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't think he's done anything else.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I
would love to see him do something with an R rating, even, because I heard it. That's another thing he said in the commentary, was that he heard somebody say fuck or something, and he realized, he remembered it was an R rated movie, and he was sort of wistful about it. He's like, you know, I wish I could do another R rated movie. They're basically just talking about how hard, and I hadn't thought about it really. I mean, until the last, you know, 5-6 years, like how much PG-13 and PG is what the studios are all about, which sucks. Because they have to get more people, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. They're just scared. It's funny. My buddy Brian Knowles, he mentioned that he said to me one day. He said, "When's the last time you were in a theater and you saw a sex scene in a movie?" And it's like, it's not common. It's not that common anymore. Because I remember going to the, you know, rent movies with my mom and going to the theater and have to close my eyes when I was little. I don't feel that anymore. Like, you know, whenever there's a sex scene, yeah, I'm desensitized to it. It's not that big of a deal. But there's that thought in the back of my head, oh, you know, maybe I should close my eyes. But there's not much nudity and sex anymore. And especially in horror films, when you go to the theater, and I mean, the amount of rated R horror films versus PG-13, the PG-13 just outweigh it at this point.
You may get some camel toe. That's about it.
Oh God.
Yeah, no, it's
that,
weird.
Is that what you look for?
No. See. No, there was a certain movie where everyone was talking about this. It was that Jewish demon movie directed by David Goyer. What's that?
Unborn?
Yeah, everyone was talking about that girl in her underwear. That's all I remember about that movie.
Yeah, it's much more titillation, and because they're doing PG-13 mostly. But yeah, it's nudity and horror were so intertwined at a certain point when we were younger, and something happened. And I guess it's just the move to PG-13. I don't know, but. Yeah. They seem to have split apart, and now you just don't have it anymore, which is kind of too bad because it was a great thing to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's not essential, but I mean, it is. It's fun for, you know, the slashers and, you know, shit like that to watch people undress and then die. There's just something, you know, like with Friday the 13th. There's just something special about that we don't have anymore, and it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it adds the whole voyeuristic thing, you know, you're watching people in an intimate situation and seeing this thing, and I think it makes you feel not dirty, but sort of like you're seeing something you shouldn't see, and then you get more of that with these actual people being killed, and it brings you into the movie in a certain way, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. But with this movie, and even the next movie we're going to be talking about, there's really not any nudity in either of these, is there? I don't think there was.
No, and specifically,
William Shatner's bare ass naked of Visiting Hours.
No, I don't.
What?
He's not.
What's that? I was like, how did I miss that?
I think I watched the UK cut, maybe.
I think the UK cut's the same as the US, actually, because we could jump into Visiting Hours right now. Visiting Hours is on a video. It's nasty. Did you? It was a video nasty?
Yeah, it was on the video nasty list. Let's go ahead and we'll take a break and come back and talk about Visiting Hours. I wanted to hit the special features really quick. The transfer I thought looked great. I don't know what you guys thought about the transfer for Bad Dreams, but I thought it looked fantastic.
Yeah, me too. No, it looked wonderful.
Yeah, and then the commentary, like we said, I didn't get to watch all of the commentary, but I've watched probably the first half hour. But the half hour that I saw was really great. He's really fun to listen to. And then there's some interviews and things like that and a little special effects documentary. So it's worth checking out.
Yeah, no, it's a good stack. I mean, it's got a good amount of stuff. And that commentary alone, I think, is pretty great. He's very sort of humble and can't talk enough about how, you know, it's just how he couldn't believe that he got it. And he sold the script in the room the first time he pitched it. And that stuff doesn't happen. It's one of those stories of, like, you know, all these things came together that never came together, that come together now or in general. And what's neat is when something like that happens and you get a great movie out of it.
Yeah.
I think it's just such a cool thing.
Yeah. And the movie's fantastic. I was really, really surprised that I liked the movie so much. So,
that's
all right,
cool.
Well, let's take a break here. Today's band is called Consider Me Dead. Their album, Young at Heart, comes out on Standby Records on April 8th. Keep your eye open for that. This song is called Like Thunder. You're listening to The Screamcast.
Breaking the connection.
That was Consider Me Dead with the song Like Thunder. It's from their album Young at Heart. It's out on April 8th. You can pre-order now over at standbyrecords.merchnow.com. And, of course, we'll have links on the show notes over at thescreamcast.com. Well, fellas, let's jump right in and talk about the movie Visiting Hours.
No.
I'm gonna start off because, as you know, like, Brad has some feelings about this movie, and I actually don't think it's. I mean, I don't think it's that bad of a movie. You know,
when someone says I don't think it's that bad of a movie, it's never good.
Well,
you're being nice.
No,
I'm not gonna be nice about Visiting Hours.
No, okay, I have some
beef with it in history, and I'll explain.
Well, I'll let you get to that history in a second, but first of all, like, I thought it was like Bad Dreams is a little bit unexpected. I was expecting just kind of some crazy batshit movie. I thought Michael Ironside was awesome in it. And,
yeah, he's good.
And I liked that they tried to make a women's empowerment film out of it. And so I liked what they were trying to make it different than the normal slasher. So I feel like Brad needs a vent. So I think we need to get to Brad and then Brian, then we'll get to you on your
Sounds
thoughts
good.
Of the movie. Okay. All right,
good.
Brad, let it out.
Well, my first experience with Visiting Hours was, just hearing about it. I had an all movie guide when I was little, like, for the computer, and it, like, went all the way up to like 1995, and I would just go through there and, like, try to visit every horror film I possibly could. And I come across Visiting Hours, and I really wanted to see it, but it was basically unavailable because it was before DVDs, and I had the VHS. I bought that. I guess I had it when I was maybe 10 or so, and I watched it and I didn't like it at all. And then I went through this kick of where I wanted to do all my VHS to DVDs. So I try to buy every single thing. Even the bad ones, as Visiting Hours was on the agenda. And I found a copy on eBay and I bought it, and it was a bootleg. And it was kind of the first time I discovered that people sold bootlegs online. I was very upset. And ever since then, I've hated the movie even more. I'm just kidding. I mean, that's not the reason why I hate the movie, but it's just history with Visiting Hours that always haunts me. I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. Anything with William Shatner, I can't take seriously. And Visiting Hours, when he appears, even though Michael Ironside's in it, and like you said, like, Michael Ironside's pretty great in anything he is. Anything he's in, he's a great character actor. He's very intimidating. Everything from like Total Recall to Watchers, he's just always a badass. And as his role is, what is it, Hawker or something? Hawker, I think. In this one, Occult Hawker is his name, which is a weird ass name for somebody, but. Yeah, it's just Visiting Hours is just kind of, it was just so slow to me. It's just like, it sounds cool, you know, that the woman hating person comes after her. It is kind of, it just felt like a bad Halloween 2 sequel. That's what it felt like to me. I've just never been a fan. It just always rubbed me the wrong way. It's not a very good review that I'm doing right now, but I just don't like Visiting Hours. I'm done. Next.
How about you, Brian? What's your history with Visiting Hours, and what are your thoughts?
This is another one. I'm not sure if I'd seen it before. Yeah. I know. Here's the thing. I know I had started to watch it at some point because I got it in the Bad Dream set, and I was like, "Have I seen this? I don't know. Let me try it." And I must have watched the first 10-15 minutes, and I gotta agree, I didn't like it. So I don't think I ever finished it.
There you go.
However, I must say that this time I watched it, and it is faint praise, but I didn't hate it either. And I think it's mostly because Ironside is so, he's also very creepy and effective as this kind of psycho. He's just got that look, and there's a lot of logic leaps that are pretty ridiculous in the movie, but ultimately, I think the thing was, is I'm all about expectations, and because I'd had that experience where I had seen it, and I remembered specifically being like, yeah, I didn't care for this movie. I came into it really low expectations, and I kind of kept waiting for me, and I'm sure Brad would disagree, but for I was like, well, when is this going to really suck? You know, and it didn't for me. The part that really got me, not to spoil too much, but there's a scene where Ironside is trying to kill one person, and he ends up killing somebody else.
You're right.
And it's a pretty disturbing scene, I got to say, especially because the person he's trying to kill, it's kind of a sad, like, scene. And so that, I think that for me, that scene, I mean, it made me not want to watch the movie again, but it also kind of made me go, all right, well, they're getting to me. I got to admit that the movie is getting to me on some level. This character is affecting me, so I got to give it that, you know. And I also liked all the actresses involved. I love Lee Grant from, like, disaster movies. She was in, like, Airport 77, and she was in one other it's in my notes somewhere. She was in some other she's in The Swarm. I love her in The Swarm, and she's in Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks movie. She's really good in that. So she was great. I see what you're saying, Brad, about Shatner, but I like him. I mean, I'm a huge Star Trek fan, so I love him in movies, like just about any movie, you know, like Pray for the Wildcats or Kingdom of the Spiders. I mean, I just think he's a lot of fun to watch, you know. I guess I don't really take him seriously either, but he doesn't pull me out enough to wreck a movie or anything like that.
And he's barely in this one. He's really not in this one that much.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. He's in the movie. The worst part of Fanboys is when he's in the movie.
You must hate Free Enterprise then. You can't even watch that, I'll bet.
I don't watch that.
Yeah, no.
I have to turn off the television when he's on those dumb commercials for Priceline.
Oh wow, you really hate him. That's I understand.
And I never ever shop through Priceline because of that.
I don't really either, but yeah.
I mean, are we sure that you weren't molested by Shatner as a kid or something? I mean, there's some deep rooted hate going on here.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan. But I will say that when I was younger, I saw Kingdom of the Spiders with my grandfather, and it was way before I knew who Shatner was or even knew what Star Trek was. So Kingdom of the Spiders holds a little place in my heart as being awesome, but other than that, Shatner can go to hell.
That's fair. I mean, there aren't too many Shatner movies I love, but I really kind of loved Kingdom of the Spiders, and that's another.
Oh yeah,
I'm hoping we might get from Scream Factory on a Blu-ray because Shout Factory put out the DVD. So that'd be great for me. I love that movie. It's kind of slow, but Shatner's effective enough, and the spiders.
The ending's
great.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I think people remember the movie. I think a lot of times you look at horror movies that stand out, and you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers or whatever, and you're like, that's got a great fucking ending that they wouldn't do now, you know, and that really makes an impression on people. But so anyway, I love Lee Grant, and I love Linda Pearl, who I hadn't really seen. I don't think she did a whole lot of other movies. She's the nurse in this one.
She's not, and it's unfortunate because she's really sticking good in this.
Yeah, she's good, and she's cute. She reminds me of, like, Jenny Agutter or, like, Haley Mills, both of which I have a crush on. I had a crush on. She's got resembles them, and she's great. And she drives an AMC Pacer like Garth in Wayne's World, and that's kind of cool. I kind of like there's certain cars that stand out in movies to me, and Gremlins and Pacers always catch my attention for some reason, because I think my wife and I both had friends that drove them in high school, and so we kind of always notice them. But yeah, she's great. So I don't know. And Ironside, just really effective, creepy and unsettling. And
he was kind of he was kind of channeling, like, you know, like it almost like felt like he had watched Maniac and was like, okay, I'm gonna try to channel, you know, I'm gonna try to channel this a little bit, you know.
Yeah, but, no, that's fair. I mean, he's even less likable than Joe Spinell in Maniac. Because you can see in some scenes in Maniac where Spinell is kind of like, you're like, okay, I can see how someone could be in a room with him for more than a couple minutes. But this guy just is so fucked up that even when he has that Brittany Murphy looking blonde trampy girl over to his house, he can't barely contain his gross, sleazy creepiness long enough to... So she's almost ready to bolt out the door in about 5 minutes, you know. Even after she sees, like, his crazy letters that he has on the wall that he's framed, I mean, I don't know too many people. I guess she sees him as like kind of punk rock because he loves to write letters to people.
Right.
And I don't know how does he here's my thing. Like, does he send the letters and then get them back, or does he make a copy of the letter that he sent?
I'm assuming he makes a copy of each letter.
Okay. I was just trying to figure that out. But it was an interesting room. That's one thing I liked, is that you see a lot of crazy people, but that was a nice little touch. Just this wall full of framed letters was really good.
Well, I was a big fan of his leather tank top. I don't know about you guys, but that was love.
You would be.
Well, you know,
no, I mean, like I said, I'm not going to watch it again probably, but it didn't.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's just like, I didn't hate it. I will never watch it again. Yeah, neither will I.
Yeah, no. I guess I don't want people to not try it. You know, I think somebody should try it.
I'm promoting Bad Dreams, and you cannot get Bad Dreams. Like, you'll get visiting hours if you buy Bad Dreams. So I'm just promoting Bad Dreams because you can't get that on a single Blu-ray.
Bad Dreams is great, and everybody should own it.
Well, I think they're at least worth a double feature. It's fun. It's fun to at least check out. I don't think it's, you know, as bad as you know what's being said here. But you know, I'm trying to see. I mean, like I said, I like movies that kind of at least try to put more under the surface. And I think there was a lot, at least effort, trying to build something. You know, they try to give you some sort of sympathy for the killer, with showing how, you know, why he hates women so much. You know what I mean?
And then he has those weird flashbacks.
Yeah. And then there's this agenda that he's stalking this newscaster who's basically on the side of this woman that killed her husband, who, you know, this woman, some court case that she's backing or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think the things like that I found, you know, really enjoyable to watch. And I liked these small touches, like his little, like the Michael Ironside's, the stress ball he would always be kind of carrying around, you know.
Yes.
There's a lot of these little touches that it's not just some, you know, hackneyed horror flick. Like, they were at least, you know, the effort was being put out, put there. The effort was being put forth to try to create a decent movie, and it looked like it was definitely inspired by Halloween 2, all the hospital stuff in Halloween 2. But no, it never reached the levels of Halloween 2, that's for sure.
No. Well, one thing that's really cool about hospital horror is that, I mean, the hospital is obviously a place where, I mean, a lot of people don't feel this way. My wife, some other people, like, hospitals should be a place where you feel safe because there's doctors, and if something goes wrong, you can get yourself fixed up, you know. But so you have that sense of, I'm safe, but in this case, you're totally not. And by the way, the hospital in Bad Dreams is one thing, but the hospital in Visiting Hours is easily one of the least well-lit hospitals I've ever seen in my life. Like, they either are trying to save a whole lot of money by not lighting too many hallways.
They're paying Shatner.
Yeah, probably.
They had to save on lighting to pay Shatner, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, so that was interesting. But there's something cool and creepy about hospital corridors, and the idea that there's sort of death, you know, looming around in a hospital on some level. People are dying somewhere, you know, so there's something interesting about that as a locale, you know. And I also like the touch for Ironside that more than a couple occasions somebody tries to talk to him and he just looks at them and doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
And there's something that, like, a great little touch about, you know, being that guy that's so creepy, I'm not even going to respond to you.
Yeah, it takes him. I timed it, guys. It takes him 36 minutes before he opens his mouth to talk, and that's and that's in the diner with to the waitress.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't talk a lot in this movie. That's for sure.
No. This was also the least safe and the least secure hospital I've ever seen put on film.
Yep. Even when there's cops in the building.
There's cops swarming the building, and this killer could just go in and out with ease.
There was definitely some things that confused me, too, where he was getting into, like, little – this is something where you see it in a movie back then, and you – but, like, post 9/11 and whatnot, I don't – I'm not saying security's hyped up everywhere, but, like, he seemed to be able to get into, like, little back door ways that could go into tunnels underneath the hospital relatively easily, and – just in general, was able to put on uniforms and nobody – like, I know it's a large hospital and the staff is large, but, like, nobody seemed to notice that he was – at first I was like, what does he actually do? Because he looked like he was with a group of orderlies or something. Yeah. And it looked like that might actually be what he did, because they didn't seem to –
They didn't care that he was around.
You know, no. So like somebody somewhere, I don't know. He just was able to sneak into a lot of places that probably wouldn't happen now. But not to be one of those people that picks a movie apart, because it's like if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. There's no need to go any further. But I don't know. For me, it was just fun to watch that stuff sometimes and just kind of roll my eyes a little bit. Yeah. You know.
I have to admit that I did have one jump scare in this movie, and it was that fucking parrot in the beginning.
Oh yeah,
scaredy cat.
No,
that parrot. I'm the worst. That's an interesting touch. Just that parrots and weird pets in movies is kind of an interesting choice sometimes. You know, it's not a dog or a cat that's jumping at you.
And I also want to kind of give a pro tip to anybody out there. I mean, when you're stabbing a killer, right, and you kill him, you think he's dead, take the knife with you. Instead of leaving the knife sticking out of their body.
But you can't have the extra 15 minutes, Sean, if you do that.
Yeah, you're going to shorten your movie, definitely, if you do
that. I guess, right. And that's another note I had. I think this movie could have done, they could have trimmed this down, maybe 15, 20 minutes. And
I just, cut out for some weird reason.
You what?
Did you put me on pause?
No.
No, you were there. I hear you the whole time.
Oh, that's weird.
We don't want you talking because you don't like this movie.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, fuck you guys. Brian could be the co-host.
Oh, man.
No, I mean, I don't, like I said, I'm not trying to print. We've talked about it way more than I actually thought we would. But
you could just change this podcast instead of screencast. Just call it Visiting Hours Podcast. Yeah. People love to hear about this shit.
Okay, fine. Jesus. Man.
I don't know why that one's more fun to talk about. I guess because there's more to sort of dig at it. And
a little more wackiness.
More, yeah, I don't know. Because Bad Dreams is just like, we all kind of agree, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And you can go into reasons why it's awesome, but it's kind of like, well, everybody should just kind of see Bad Dreams. But for a movie where we're like kind of a little bit down on it, which is fair, you know, I feel like going a little more into detail about it, little things I noticed.
But. Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's easier to, you know, pick apart something and reasons why you don't like it rather than everybody agreeing. And that's why it's fun, too, when people disagree because you have more to talk about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, let's go into the transfer of this one. Bad Dreams had a really great transfer. This transfer is not as good. I think I think the print was probably dirtier than the Bad Dreams print. But it was okay. You know, it was all right. It
sounded, William Shatner owns the immaculate one.
Probably. And then the special features, I was thinking this was kind of bare bones, but then I kind of this morning I threw it on a little bit to see. And there's about a 45-minute interview with the writer, Brian Taggart, so talking about the movie. So if you want to sit around for 45 minutes and listen to the writer talking about Visiting
Everybody Hours. Race to Amazon to purchase it now.
Brad, I know you're going to...
Visiting Hours, you get a 45-minute interview with the screenwriter.
You want to hear that, dude. You're going to put that on MP3 and play it in your car, I think.
It's a bit dry, and I don't know what else Brian Taggart's written, but...
Visiting Hours Part 2, but it never did get made.
Probably still waiting for that to get greenlit.
Yeah, William Shatner plays the killer.
So, well, I mean, I'm all talked out of Visiting Hours. Sorry, guys, I keep bringing stuff up, but you know, the disc as a whole. Go for it.
Sorry, one quick thing. I'm not to be Mr. IMDb, but I had to look up Brian Taggart. He wrote Wanted, Dead or Alive, Of Unknown Origin, and Poltergeist 3.
No.
Those are all really good movies.
Yeah, I love Of Unknown
and
Origin.
And he wrote the story for The New Kids. So,
dude, I love The New Kids.
Yeah, so there's three that I'll give him a pass for this because he's got. Yeah, Of Unknown Origin is one of the best killer animal movies. Well, definitely.
Rat movies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Next to Deadly Eyes, which I can't wait for from Scream Factory, as I've told you. Deadly Eyes is awesome. Really bad, but it's good. but Poltergeist 3, I just revisited that literally like 2 weeks ago, and I really dig that movie. I mean, it's not like the greatest thing ever, but it's got great effects, and it's cool.
Yeah, I actually like the Poltergeist sequels more than Poltergeist.
I think I've come to – I guess I'm not like bored with Poltergeist, but it's just the sequels are more interesting on some level because they're just weirder, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually always thought the first one was a little more on the boring side. And it's not bad. It's not a bad movie by any means, but it is just kind of uneventful to me, I think. It's just kind of there. It's just a good story, good characters, good acting, but just, you know, no like big events.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure plenty of people disagree with me, just like they probably would disagree about visiting hours, but I'm sticking to it.
I think more people would agree with you about visiting hours.
Probably.
It's just something about Spielberg and horror just doesn't – I don't think he's got it in him. I think – and I know it was Tobe Hooper, but I feel like it was definitely a collaboration between the two.
Dude, Spielberg directed that thing through and through.
I'm not sure where I stand on that. Probably did, yes. But – that being said, there's something about horror where I just don't know if you have to be a little bit more, I don't want to say demonic, or, you know, have a little bit of like evil in you, that's a darker side to you that I don't think Spielberg can quite tap into. And I think that's part of the reason Poltergeist 2 Poltergeist is interesting, but not a great horror movie for fans like us. You know, like, we need our horror to be a little bit darker, you know, a little bit weirder.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that stands out. Anyway, to sidetrack. The disc, I mean, it's interesting. The interview, yeah, a little bit dry. But so overall, the disc is great.
Overall, this double feature, you guys happy with this disc? Is it worth the 20-some-odd dollars that I plunked down?
Wait for it to be on sale for $18.89, and you will be okay, because you'll be feeling good that you spent $18 on Bad Dreams.
Yes, yes. I think it's worth picking up. I bought it.
Yeah, it's two movies for the price, basically price of one Scream Factory release, and I mean, you're definitely getting, you know, one good movie. I mean, you might like Visiting Hours, so you won't know until you give it a shot.
But yeah, Bad Dreams is well worth. I would buy just about any set that had Bad Dreams in it on Blu-ray for the first time, you know.
Definitely.
They could put some crappy, like, I don't
they want did to
call out a bad movie.
you basically just said what they did. They released a shitty movie. I'm sorry, it's not shitty, it's just really bad.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not gonna glorify everything Scream Factory has done.
No, you don't.
They've released some, you know, poopy movies, and Visiting Dreams. Visiting Hours is definitely one of them.
Fair enough.
All right, fellas. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Screamcast. I think we've...
Well, just one second. We were speaking of, critics and everything. Nice. I think Brian Sauer has a documentary he's working on.
Oh, yes.
Do you know that you're working on a documentary?
I am. I was aware of it. It's a slow process because I'm doing it like over a long period. But it's about Danny Perry. He's a film writer. He was much more active in the 80s. But he wrote Cult Movies 1, 2, and 3, Guide for the Film Fanatic, Alternate Oscars, Cult Movie Stars. And the books were a big, big influence on me when I was in college, and sort of were part of the reason I shifted my focus to studying film, and are probably a big part of the reason I'm doing what I do now and everything like that. So he was a big part of turning me on to a lot of movies that are like my favorite movies, you know, like Cutter's Way and Night Moves and all these other things that I love, horror movies too. So anyway, I was in a documentary about arcade collectors, and I thought I could try and do something like that. And he was the guy for me that I wanted to do something about. So I had interviewed him in 2010. I still had contact with him. And I approached him, and he was okay with it. I mean, he's a little bit kind of a humble guy, kind of a quiet guy, so it's a little weird for him, I think, to have me doing this. But there's so many people in the industry that were influenced by him that it's been fun to sort of reach out to critics, screenwriters, directors. You know, I've talked to Dan Waters. I've talked to Larry Karaszewski, Josh Olson. Patton Oswalt, you know, a lot of people really dug his books, and they really filled a place for them to sort of seek out cinema. And it's sort of this idea that's stuck with me of just like giving everything a chance, you know, like if somebody out there probably likes it, you know, give it a look for yourself kind of thing before you write something off. So anyway, that's what I'm working on. It's a long-term project. We'll see. I have a YouTube channel. It's just Danny Perry Doc. On YouTube, and you can look up little clips for the interviews if you want, but it probably won't be done for another. Sorry.
What? How long? How long can we expect?
Oh,
this?
at least another year. At least another year for sure. I'd say.
I thought you were gonna like say like 10 years or something.
No. Maybe late 2015 at the earliest. I would think, just based on how long it's gonna take me to get everything done. So, but it's been an interesting.
Good.
Thank you for letting me plug it.
Oh, no problem. And we'll make sure that we have you on the show at least one more time so you can plug it in 2015.
That's good.
Yes.
When we do another like deluxe review of Bad Dreams Visiting Hours double disc from Screen Factory.
The Super Collector's Edition.
Yeah, nice. Super Collector's Edition.
So, Brian, where can people find you else on the internet? What are your...
You can find me at Brad F. Henderson.
No, talking to Brian.
I'm Bob Freelander.
You called me Brian earlier, by the way.
I know. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Brian. Go ahead, Brian. Sorry. Bob Freelander.
I'm on Twitter as Bob Freelander. I'm quite active on Twitter, and I welcome anybody that wants to start a conversation about movies or anything with me on Twitter. I have my blog, which you mentioned earlier. Thank you, Brad. RupertPupkinSpeaks.blogspot.com, and I've always got something going on there. So those are the two big places for me. There's a Facebook page for Rupert Pupkin Speaks also if you want to look at that. But, those are my spots.
And, George, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at Brad F. Henderson on Twitter. And, of course, you can follow us on Scream_cast for all our shenanigans.
Yes.
That's what I'm going to say. All shenanigans.
Right. And you can find us at thescreamcast.com. Check out past shows there, reviews, trickling reviews, and then news and announcements that catch our eye, we throw up on there. So you can find me on Twitter, Sean C. DeRager, and you can find out how to spell that on thescreamcast.com because my name's up there. So, all right, guys. Have a great week or 2 weeks. We'll talk to you next time.
Soon. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.